Welcome to the Football by Football Podcast.
And welcome back to the Football by Football Podcast. This is Matt Chatham, your host. Doubled up today with Brady's studio full here of guys. Both Brady Papinga and Brady Quinn are on the line. We're going to do a little college football and NFL, trying to mash it all in here because it's been a huge week in just the game of football. We're going to lead off here with Brady Quinn. Obviously, we've been doing the college football show throughout the year. And obviously, the championship was last Monday. Game's now in the books. Alabama's your champion. What's sort of your big takeaway from that game, Brady?
The interesting part, I think, for me at least, was I don't know how many of us really thought special teams was going to be the deciding factor in that game. And also right. The fact that, you know, Alabama was really kind of back on their heels. They could not stop Deshaun Watson and Clemson's offense. I should just say Deshaun Watson, though, with as many yards as he could.
Right.
550 total yards. He had about 478 that he accounted for. So a pretty remarkable performance, even though it was a loss. But that being said, I think you go back to the special teams play, the surprise onside kick when it was tied up at 24-24. Pretty gutsy call, but I think at the time, Nick Saban looked at his defense. He saw his defensive front getting worn down and probably said to himself, we're not stopping these guys anytime soon. We have to find a way of creating momentum. And that was really what it started with. It started with the onside kick to get in field position to get a score, and then obviously the big return for a touchdown as well. And that pretty much was the difference in the game.
Hey, Brady Papinga, I know you served on these things just like I did. The kick return unit for Clemson, best I could tell anyway, I was looking at that spider cam thing. ESPN was doing that sort of super broadcast thing or wherever, where they had it on like three channels. And you go on the ESPN app and actually see this crazy spider cam. It was almost like watching all 22, but it would continue to move. I thought, you know, independent of the game situation, it was 24-24 when they decided to do the little onside kick. I did notice as well, tackle was the position, or I played usually either guard, one of the two center spots. I've had a little tackle on kick return teams, but I noticed how narrow they were. And right when the guy did it, it was like, oh, okay, I get it. Because we always had this rule, you had to be wide as the widest. If they, you know, if they spread a guy out and you weren't as wide as him, there was a danger that could happen what happened in that game.
Yeah, and also you got to be able to go off of the kick of the ball. So many guys try to get a jump on the ball, and they anticipate the ball being kicked, and so they start to already take their drops to go and block before the ball is kicked, and that gives the kicker an opportunity to give you a little okie-dokie and surprise inside you. So, there's a lot of mechanics there, but obviously Clemson did not follow through on it.
Exactly. Well, I know a lot of people, there's a side story to this for us up here in New England. The Patriots tried to surprise onside earlier this season against the Eagles. Didn't work. I think it was Eagles game. Didn't work. He got a ton of flack for it. It was sort of they were up 14-0, an aggressive call at the time. They got a formation they liked where they wanted to run it, and they didn't execute it very well. But that was the thing that popped in my head. It's like, oh, man, that's the time you want to do it. It's almost like with a punt fake where when you have them aligned a certain way, maybe you catch them in an overload or something like that. If the game situation allows you to do it and you got to coach with balls that clank, you go ahead and pull the trigger. I really like seeing that. I love aggressive play calls like that. But so all that aside, this is a question that's sort of beyond just the nuts and bolts of the game itself, but something I wanted to ask you guys. I'm raising my hand here, sort of scout's honor. Obviously doing the college football show with you guys all year, doing games for ESPN3 all season. I obviously follow and work in the game of college football. I watched the first half of that Alabama-Clemson game. I actually fell asleep midway through the third quarter and ended up, you know, obviously ended up catching the score the next day. And then on my DVR, rewatching the quarter and a half that I missed. The reason I bring that point up is the NCAA's got a little bit of heat this season for having the game when they had it. You know, after, you know, whatever it was, July or January 11th, 12th, whatever day we were on, 10th, I think it was. But anyway, the point is it's you've already gone through a round of the playoffs. It's a little bit late, and it's on a Monday night. So it kind of hits in a little dead spot. You know, you just got through the craziness of Wild Card Weekend. Do you see any error in the timing, or is this just it is what it is, and Matt, you're old? Brady Quinn.
I personally loved it because you weren't competing with anything else. I love the way ESPN went about covering it. They call it the mega cast. I mean, it's
mega
you can
cast,
literally watch
yes.
it in every way possible. I even think the colorblind people, they had a different broadcast for them. so they can differentiate the colors of the team's jerseys and all that. But it was absolutely unbelievable the way they went about promoting it, making it feel big. You have to think that, you know, the college football playoff would love to continue to work with ESPN moving forward because they have that kind of power to do something like that. But I personally loved it. I thought it was a very, very exciting game. I'm still curious how you could possibly fall asleep, Chatham. You've got to be dead tired at this point in the season.
It's age. I think it's age. Well, one of the things I noticed in the game, I'll send this back to Brady Papenga, but one of the things that did stand out for me is, I guess if I'm doing this like fantasy football, as if it were in college, there were obviously a lot of points. I think the first half, they were a little harder to come by. The gates opened up a little bit in the third and fourth quarter. But one of the things that struck me, and obviously at the time, especially through the first half when I was still wide awake, was evaluating Deshaun Watson. I watched him actually in the Notre Dame game earlier this year, Brady, and then I watched him in the ACC championship game. Those are the really only two long looks against North Carolina, the game that I got of him this season. So I really was interested in, you know, is this guy a legit pro prospect or not? And he really was impressive, as you mentioned. A lot of move the pocket stuff, but some of the odd, you know, off balance, just rifle throws was like Randall Cunningham-esque to me, like long whippy release, just could fling it and threw some dimes on patterns down the field too that were exceptional. So I found that interesting. But okay, so side story with all of that, as they got into that second half, I was blown away with how many busted coverages. If you go back and just watch sort of a highlight package of the national championship game, you go back to most of the biggest plays and draw a circle around the guy who's catching the ball. There's not anyone within like 5-yard circle, 10 yards in some cases. I was struck a little bit knowing how good that, you know, supposedly both of these two defenses were, how much just wide open real estate there was out there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that, I think, just goes to the fact that you had a big-time game, and a lot of those, I mean, these teams have faced each other all year long, but just maybe the moment got to some of them a little bit, where you're doing a little bit too much, and both defenses were on their heels for the majority part of the game. And I know just playing defense, man, Matt, you could say for this too, when all of a sudden one other part of your defense starts to break down, you start to think, okay, I got to do their job, so that you go out of your job responsibility, and then all of a sudden you trigger another guy that tries to cover for you, and it just turns into a big mess. So I can see that maybe being a potential there with the reason behind a lot of bus coverage.
One thing I'd like to give a little credit to as well is Lane Kiffin, because what he started to do is he started to displace the tight end O.J. Howard outside. And what happened was when Mackenzie Alexander, their outstanding cornerback, went out with a hamstring injury in that game, it forced that inexperienced, I think his name's Adrian Baker, if I'm not mistaken, or Adrian Baker, number 21. He came into that cornerback position, didn't have quite as much experience playing, and I think that was where some of the confusion came. There had to be communication, obviously, because of a tight end being out there. They weren't exactly sure how to cover him at times or was responsible for him. And it seemed like on some of those big plays, it was either a miscommunication or it was Baker missing a tackle on the one play where Howard really turned it up the sidelines for a touchdown. So I think that played a part as well. So give credit to Lane Kiffin, but also you got to kind of notice the fact that Clemson was without their best cornerback in Alexander.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed when I would just work in games during the year, and the MAC is a really wide-open league, so we're going to get even more of this. Actually, the game we saw there in the national championship game looked like a MAC game. But you see a lot of cover four, and it's much thinner underneath, and everyone's on top of everything. It looks like virtually every coverage is bail. I just noticed a lot of that, where guys are running a slant or skinny posts, and every tackle is coming from high down onto them. It just looked like a lot of wide open running route. The reason I even bring that up is because I'm trying to sort of do the, you know, junior scout guy just for the day thing and say, you know, well, does this guy have it? And this is, maybe there's NFL guys all over the field on both sides of the ball, obviously, but the scheme stuff's a little bit different. And it was a little difficult to judge Watson because some of those windows, it's nice location by him. It's just him and Coker as well acknowledging, oh, there's the wide open dude executing the throw, but there's no one around him. They're not real tight windows. So just felt like this is really entertaining. I don't know if this is necessarily pro-style football. But that's not the point. It's still a fun game. But
one thing as we kind of look forward to next year in college football, there's something that's kind of interesting, and I think it's something that people should talk about, at least discuss and look at, is the preseason rankings. So, you know, obviously right after the college football season ends, everyone always starts talking about next season and who's going to be the top teams. And they throw in Clemson at number one, and rightfully so. They've got a lot of guys returning. And then they throw Alabama in there. And Alabama is a team that, I get it, they just won a national championship, but they graduate a lot of guys. Coker, the quarterback, Henry, their running back, Kelly, their center, Raglan, A'shaun Robinson, Jonathan Allen. I mean, there's a ton of guys who will be gone. O.J. Howard. They're all gone. And I get it, Nick Saban's good, and they have a great recruiting class coming in. But you're putting this team at number two in the preseason ranking, and I think what happens is you're doing them other teams an injustice. Because when you set the standard at Alabama's two, it's kind of easier for them to kind of stay within that top of the pack. Even if they drop a game, they can still find their way back in. Where if you're a team that's sitting at maybe 30 or 35 in the preseason rankings, and you might have a great season like North Carolina last year, all of a sudden it gets really hard to creep back up into that top four of the college football playoff. And we didn't see it this year because North Carolina didn't beat Clemson, but they were ranked 10th at the second to last rankings. And had they beat Clemson, I would have been curious to see if they would have leapfrogged everyone to get up into that number four spot. So it is an interesting conversation. Like when we're sitting here talking about looking forward in college football to next season, is we should be a little more delicate with how we go about ranking some of these teams, because it has a huge factor at the end of the season.
Like the pole position, right? Like there's a super advantage to being up front there. It'll be interesting to see where it goes, because I like it from this view. I mean, you guys know I'm an Iowa fan. That's where I grew up, and I still kind of cheer and work for the Big Ten there for a little while, and had kind of my eyeball on the fact that Michigan State had a dog of a bowl game. Iowa had a dog of a bowl game. Ohio State looked great, but actually finishes fourth, and Stanford jumped them, and I think ends up three in the AP poll at least, which I found kind of interesting because Clemson, you know, was right there with Alabama. So the voters kept them at two, which was interesting. I think that was right to do. I like that they kept it that way. Alabama leads. That means an SEC team obviously wins at this particular season, but ACC, which usually doesn't usually get a lot of juice. I think a year ago, we're talking about Florida State and kind of everyone else. And then Florida State gets beat, which I think, you know, really put a bit of a stain on the ACC, not knowing what they were. But for Clemson to hang right on the heels of Alabama, it keeps this conversation from going, whoa, SEC is so much better than everyone. And because we didn't get to see Ohio State in that Final Four tournament, you don't really know where they slot in, although they looked pretty impressive in their bowl game. But I guess, if anything, for me, the big takeaway there is it's still pretty close. You know, the Big 12 had a bad tournament. The Pac-12, pretty solid. So I don't think you come out of this bowl season with one conference just far out in front of everyone. I think it was a pretty competitive field, and I think that's a good thing. Let me transition here into last week's games, and I'll tee it up to you, Brady Papenga. Obviously, there's four games on the docket. Any of the four that stood out for you? I know, obviously, in the week you wrote a good column about the Packers and the Redskins and sort of the schizophrenia that went on with both of those two offenses. Obviously, it plays out that Aaron Rodgers has a great game and the offense bounced back. Something from that game, something from any of the other that grabbed your attention?
Yeah, for the Packers game, you know, as they're calling it with Fox Deportes, so I was able to see it live, and it was pretty funny because in the first quarter, you know, the Packers went out, they only accumulated 11 total yards, and that's when they went down 11-0. And after the game, I caught up with Aaron Rodgers, and I was interviewing, I was like, bro, what the heck? I was like, how do you go when you put up 11 total yards in the first quarter, and then the rest of the game, you guys just pretty much dominated? He's like, oh, we got the wind at our back, is what he said to me. I was like, are you kidding? Yeah. The wind was that big of a factor, and he was joking. But the thing that really jumped out at me in that game, though, I thought was the play calling, because Mike McCarthy finally adjusted his play calling, taking into consideration the deficiencies they have on their offensive line, not only in the sense that he was doing a lot more quick game, but also in the running game, I thought he did an excellent job of throwing some counter looks at him and doing some stuff that he hadn't done in quite a long time, talking about putting certain personnel groupings out there. Like one of them was, so they had Kuhn as like a fullback, H-back moving guy, and then they put Randall Cobb in as the tailback. That ultimately, yep. And then they put the Washington Redskins defense to sub-defense so they could spread them out to create those running lanes. That ignited their running game. And then after that, they complement that with bringing in two tight ends and then Eddie Lacy, obviously Kuhn as a fullback, and just pounded them. And they're really just keeping them off guard as to what kind of personnel grouping they're going to use and still being able to run the ball. And so I thought McCarthy was masterful in keeping that defense off guard of the air and doing his thing. He had that little option play there where he had the option of either sticking the ball in the belly of the running back and just letting him have it and running yards, or pulling it and immediately throwing it quick hitch route out in the flat, guys like Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb. And so a lot of that kind of quick game stuff, play calling, running the ball, some creative formations, I thought went a long way in that game. This week against Arizona, all that kind of stuff gets thrown out the window just because Arizona's just, in my opinion, a higher quality team. But, yeah, they threw us all for a loop, did the Packers. Everybody was saying as we were going to that game that the Redskins were the favorites. And lo and behold, the Packers never once looked at themselves as being the underdogs going into that game, and it held true.
I think a lot of people, a lot of people are going to talk about, the missed kicks and all that. I think what always gets overlooked is running back when they fumble. They never receive as much blame as per se, like a quarterback. I mean, God forbid, had Andy Dalton played in that game for the Bengals and he had thrown an interception versus Jeremy Hill fumbling the football, it somehow would have been all on him, even with what Vontaze Burfict and Adam Jones did. It's just always ironic to me as a former quarterback to see how they kind of always slide under the radar a bit. I mean, they receive a little bit of blame, but never as much as if it's a quarterback or even a kicker in this place. Now, don't get me wrong, I think it's hard to not say that Blair Walsh can't be blamed for that because of how short it was. But, again, as a former holder, I will say this too. It's not that difficult to spin the football with gloves on. And I would assume if you're a holder and you're in Minnesota, you're accustomed to being outside in the cold and practicing it. So I was a little bit confused why that wasn't the case. It happened twice in the game. Fortunately, Blair Walsh could kick underneath the football to make the first one, but he wasn't able to on the 27-yarder.
Yeah, with the Blair Walsh thing, he's getting killed. Everybody's saying he lost in the game. But if you look at his record inside of, 35 yards? He's, 95-some-odd percent in that range. And I'm a guy, Tim. I'm not overly sympathetic to kickers. I've been on a lot of wrong ends of, you play your butt off, you go out, you put your team in position to win, the kicker trots out there, and, he's got one job, and he goes and misses a dinky field goal, and you lose the game, But still, he's operating at a 95% rate. I would love to have, when I played, operated at a 95% rate, So even though he missed that one, which obviously is the game decider, I mean, he's still an unbelievable kicker, and they wouldn't even have been in that position without him. So it's all about your perspective and the angle that you look at it. But, man, the guy's one heck of a kicker, and unfortunately he missed the biggest one. But still, to operate at 95% rate, that's playing some pretty elite football.
Yeah, I agree to a certain extent. I guess the only thing that I had in my head was kind of to Brady Quinn's earlier point about the laces. It's an in-game operation thing, and if you've held, obviously, Brady, you understand this. If you gave him the laces once or even twice as happened in the game, then you go over to the holder, and a lot of that – or I'm sorry, to the snapper. A lot of that, how the holder will get the laces has to do with how the snapper starts it to you. Most of them have it tuned in so much that they know the amount of rotations and you should get it about the same way each time. So the fact that they didn't make an adjustment after getting laces twice and the last of them was probably the worst of the group, and it's freezing cold later in the day by that time. And again, he still has to make it. You still have to power through it. But it just, to me, looked like the operation. It's always a three-man group. It seemed like between the three of them, they didn't get it straight. Now, I say all that, and this is to kind of agree with Brady Papenga's point. They didn't score a touchdown. I don't think you deserve to win a wild card game if you don't score a touchdown. I don't think you deserve – I don't think you need to be complaining about not advancing in the playoffs when he couldn't score. So, yeah, the kicker made a bunch of kicks, and he did miss the last one. But and this actually kind of dovetails on Brady Quinn's earlier point about the backs. I actually thought for the fumble stuff this weekend, I thought Jeremy Hill got a lot of heat, the way I at least perceived it on TV, because they kept doing that goofy – the shame cam, when the broadcast cameras put the cam on the guy that fumbled, and they just never take it off him. They keep checking back for him, even when the dialogue is actually talking about something else. But I say that because I was looking for the same shame cam for Adrian Peterson, and Adrian didn't get it. AD didn't get it at all, and I thought his was much more avoidable because he was carrying the ball without the tip covered. I wrote about that on Football by Football this week, where – he has a habit of just kind of taking it out there like a loaf of bread. He's so aggressive. It's not about not trying, but it was sort of that attention to detail. And in this instance, that's terrible football by Peterson, but actually really great football by Cam Chancellor. It was pretty cool to watch his awareness because, you know, you're about to tackle one of the toughest guys to tackle in football, but to be able to go in there and also be able to find the ball and find out, oh gosh, this guy didn't cover the tip up on this one, do the perfect strip, get it out. I thought at least in that instance, they earned the victory. My quick sort of takeaway here from the weekend was really the only team in my head who did not encounter bad football was Kansas City. So we don't get to learn much because Houston was so historically bad. I really had the feeling that both the Steelers and the Bengals played really, really bad. They just kept wanting to give it away from one another. I mean, there's half a dozen times you could have thrown personal foul flags on medical personnel from the Steelers or their coaching staff or players. And it's just my own personal opinion, but I have a hard time buying into the Bengals blew it. Yes, they did blow it, but the Steelers blew it too. And just, you know, blew it a little less, I guess. But I guess I'm taking this more of what then can I glean from this as we go into this next week? And I take from it that the only team I came away going, wow, you know, wow, was really Kansas City, which is not really what I went into the weekend expecting. Now, the Packers played great, yes, but there's still that little thing in the back of my head because I wasn't super high on Washington just because the NFC East was so beat up that I'm still not sure where they're at. So we go into this next week. Divisional round games, and I think Kansas City's a little bit scary. Now, they could get completely annihilated here by New England, and that little storyline will go away fast, but I at least came away going, you know, this is a team that really deserves some respect. Okay, now here, let's transition into the divisional round, and we'll start with you, Brady Quinn, because I know you got a bail here shortly. Any particular matchup here in the weekend's games that sort of catches your attention? Anything where you might find some surprises?
Well, I'll let Brady Potinga talk about the Packers because it feels like maybe they've got their mojo back and maybe they will be able to beat Arizona. It's always tough to beat a team twice in a season. So I'm going to talk about the Seattle Seahawks traveling all the way across the country again to Carolina. They just traveled to Minnesota. Now they go back to Seattle. Now they got to go back to Carolina. I mean, you guys know from playing, it's tough to have back-to-back road games, but even more so for the Seahawks because they're so far away. Now, they go 2 days ahead of time, so it should help them adjust, but I'm a little bit more looking at this game as it was kind of a knockdown, drag-out fight, emotional ride versus Minnesota in their wild-card round game. I wonder, can they recover? Can they come back around and be able to play another physical game versus a very stout defense and a very dominant running-style team who's rested, who's feeling pretty good right now? I've got to be curious about that. I'm also curious to see if Marshawn Lynch does indeed play because Christian Michael at running back is not the same runner. He's got a little bit more of a burst. He likes to bounce things to the outside and then go ahead and get to the edges and explode upfield from there. So if Lynch does, how does he fit in? How effective is he able to be? And can he kind of give them that lift in the running game? Obviously, Thomas Rawls, when he came in for Lynch when he was injured, very similar styles and running. Not so much, though, with Christian Michael. So that changed a little bit. And I think it could be good or bad for the Seahawks. We'll have to wait and see. But can they be able to overcome maybe one of the best teams in the NFC this year? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But I feel like whenever you get Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks and all that experience going to Super Bowls and then winning a Super Bowl, I feel like it doesn't bode well. Something just doesn't sit right with me that they've got another opportunity now in the playoffs to be able to make a run.
Back to you, Brady Papenga. On that Packers game with Arizona, do you give them a chance? I personally had Arizona as one of my sort of darlings, maybe even a Super Bowl favorite coming out of the NFC. How do you see that game shaking down?
Yeah, I mean, it's for the Packers, it's going to come down again to their ability to protect Aaron and run the football. And in the first meeting, they actually ran the ball pretty well. Eddie Lacy had 60 yards on 12 carries. He just didn't get many opportunities because they found themselves in such a hole so quickly. So then they were playing catch-up ball, and then that's when they're just basically having predictable passing situation after predictable passing situation. And Aaron became a sitting duck where he was sacked a total of 8 times, and then Tolzien came in, and he was sacked again. And the Arizona Cardinals was able to come away with 9 total sacks in that game. But, you know, I know this. Mike McCarthy going into that game, he knows the best way to slow down a pass rusher, at least he says it is, is to run the ball at them to tire them down, and then obviously make it to where they can't anticipate the pass, or they can pin their ears back. And so you keep them off balance, you try to tire them out. So I wouldn't imagine, I would be surprised if they don't come out and just try to pound the football, tire down that front, and then keep them off balance. And then at the same time, continue with the quick game like you did against the Washington Redskins, and then throw out another kind of different personnel grouping slash formation to keep them off guard, keep them guessing, make them go through their checks. As we know, it's those 34 defenses that are heavy blitz defenses a lot of times when there's different formations and the strength formation shift. There's a lot of moving parts on defense. More times the defense or any of your opponent has to make choices and changes, the higher likelihood that something breaks down. So I could see that being a situation there. But one thing, though, that the Redskins could not do that I could see coming from a million miles away that ultimately is one of the Packers' biggest weaknesses was press man coverage. They just didn't have the personnel in the secondary. Well, guess what? The Arizona Cardinals are as good as anybody at running right. press man coverage that's epitomized by Patrick Peterson. So it's going to be a tough game for the Packers. I'm going to be really honest with you. To me, Arizona is the most complete team, at least throughout the regular season on a consistent basis, although I would say overall I'd say potentially most complete teams, the Seattle Seahawks. But they showed it throughout the whole year. I mean, they're top, I believe, 8 running the ball, throwing the ball, number 2 overall in points scored per game. Carson Palmer's looked fantastic. Their defense does an excellent job of just keeping people out of the end zone. They give up a lot of yards, but when the field gets tight and condensed into that red zone, man, they played really good. I think they're number 7 overall in points allowed, that Arizona Cardinal defense. So it's going to be one heck of a challenge for the Packers. I mean, their defense is essentially going to have to win it. They're going to have to force turnovers, and that's going to have to be the difference, because I don't know if the Packers' offense is going to find more than maybe 17 to 21 points in that game.
Well, one of the things that sort of jumps out to me is, and it starts with that Packers game, and I think it really runs through the thread of all of these. All 8 of these teams have, to varying degrees, some questions to answer this weekend in relation to injuries. Now, it's not like we all know this. I mean, we've all been in playoff games, and we've all, especially you, Brady Papenga, have been through a Super Bowl run. Heavy injuries are normal. I mean, it's not like it's not unusual to have beat up rosters and to have concerns going in each week. I just only think it jumps to me that it's different this year, and that it seems to be a lot of really key guys. Maybe that's just more perception than reality, but Devontae Adams going down last week, Antonio Brown getting knocked out at the end of the game, Ben Roethlisberger having at least the AC sprain, whatever it is, something serious going on, the Patriots with Julian Edelman and basically everyone that plays on their offensive line, up and down the list here, Jonathan Stewart not playing for Carolina. I mean, he's been their workhorse throughout the year. Greg Olsen's played beat up. Denver's actually one of the more healthy teams out there, best I can tell. Yeah. But Kansas City, Jeremy Maclin. I mean, he has what everyone believes is a blown ACL. Turns out he's got a mild high ankle sprain to come out of the thing. So he may actually play. But just sort of the oddball circumstances regarding injuries and how those might affect games or might not affect them, I think is kind of a compelling storyline, because a lot of these teams are really dramatically different in the absence. I mean, you take away Jeremy Maclin, there's Travis Kelce and a two-headed back thing, which is they've still won that way, but I think it really changes the face of that team. Antonio Brown, D'Angelo Williams maybe possibly coming back off an ankle. That's just not the Steeler defense or offense that I think fell in love with or became aware of throughout the season. I think they could easily be a notch back. And really any of these examples, other than maybe the Cardinals, I think the Cardinals sit relatively healthy. Seattle, as Brady Quinn mentioned, just the Marshawn Lynch thing is probably the biggest story there. But other than that, they're basically whole, other than Jimmy Graham, and that's an old story. But I'm interested to see, and Brady, you actually touched on this earlier, I think it sounded like both of you, and maybe I'm quoting you incorrectly here, but it seemed to feel good about Seattle. I actually came out of the Minnesota game a little put off by them, or at least, you know, just as a gambling man, not someone I felt good getting behind. I played against Tennessee in the divisional playoff games years and years ago, and it was super cold, and it wasn't a terribly high-scoring game, but we weren't a terribly high-scoring team at the time. I was scrolling through history and some of the older, colder games, and they don't all necessarily push to lower output. I think there's a perception that it's cold, you're somehow not going to be able to score. I thought the not be able to score thing in that game was really more of a function that Minnesota's been involved in a lot of those kinds of games because their offense is kind of plodding, and then they just wait for Adrian to explode for one, and the defense plays pretty good and tight defense. I felt a little, I don't know, I lost some faith in Seattle's offense. They just looked putrid on that day to me. I mean, really the reason they won that game was a botched snap that ended up being a broken play, and Russell just made a play, you know, the magic that Pete Carroll was talking about in the aftermath. But other than that, they didn't do a whole lot. So I'm having a hard time just thinking they'll flip the switch on when they fly across the country to Carolina, which, again, is nipping at the heels of being one of those more complete teams like Arizona.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, one thing we haven't talked about is Peyton Manning taking over the reins there. I don't know what you guys think, but in my opinion, I don't think that bodes well for the Broncos. They haven't really played well with him in the saddle. When he did play, obviously, he's led the NFL in interceptions. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, just because he shows up in that last game versus San Diego Chargers, they run the ball better, the running backs hold on to the ball, he doesn't really make any plays through the air, all of a sudden, Kubiak said, oh, he's our guy, he's going to lead us to the promised line. Do you guys feel like Kubiak made the right decision there?
Yeah, I'm kind of the mind that they couldn't be wrong. And I know that maybe that just sounds like I'm fence sitting too much, but I have a feeling that if they'd have put Manning in, if they'd have put Osweiler back in as their starter for this game, I don't think Peyton Manning at this point is really psychologically, I think he might've pouted a little bit because I call it arrogant, and I don't use it arrogant as a negative thing. I think he's got a great ego, which you need at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
But I don't think that he would have been any less effective if he had to come off the bench. And I look at Osweiler, and I have to think in my head, like, dude, this guy, you have to understand, you came into the NFL. You just happen to be drafted by the team that has, you know, one of the best quarterbacks ever on it. So I think you get a sense of knowing that you're the next in line, so you can't get terribly upset if for some reason by default they went with him instead of you. It's just like if you'd have been on any maybe 28 of the other rosters in the NFL, that's probably going to happen to you as well. And that doesn't mean that you're not going to be the guy the next year after. So I really felt like they were in sort of a luxury position. They couldn't go wrong. Either guy should perform at a comparable level, at least in my eye. And honestly, I think both guys are very capable of shit in the bed too. I mean, that's how Manning got out of the position. You know, that's Manning threw whatever it was. He set the record in the first half and threw four or five interceptions, whatever the hell it was. So that part of his game could still come back. So if I'm Brock Osweiler and I'm just really interested in helping my team again, starting on the bench isn't a guarantee you're not going to play. I still think he could have a role. And if they just started Osweiler, let's be honest, the reason he lost the gig is because he had a huge turnover half himself. So I think if I'm Gary Kubiak, you're going to go with the hand that's not throwing it or that's not turning the ball over. I think your number one weapon right now is your running game and your defense. And the quarterback decision to me is great. You know, it's great fodder for the media. It's great for us to talk about and debate, but I don't think it's terribly consequential. I think they could go through the playoffs and potentially get towards the Super Bowl and never have to score more than 23 points, you know? And I got a feeling that either of those two guys could get them there. So I'm just of the mind that I understand the debate, but it's not the end of the world to me. So one other thing I wanted to touch on here, and I wanted to get kind of your take on this, because this is sort of the big – I guess because I'm obviously living and working in the New England market, it's something that we talk about a lot about how, you know, having sort of stinker performances, the Patriots of 2-4 in their last six games. I was trying to sort of use the experience of what happened with the Packers last weekend to try to encourage people to understand that, you know, some of these really elite guys like the Rodgers and like Tom Brady, provided they get the right play calling behind them and they get the right little bit of protection that they need, they can get hot and it just doesn't matter. You know, like all the other issues that they were having a couple weeks or two ago can melt away. And that's not to just, you know, I'm not trying to pump these guys up too much. Clearly they get enough love wherever they go. But I kind of have it in my head that it is a very real thing. It's a very real thing to where the Packers looked atrocious a couple weeks ago. Really, for 2 weeks, not great. And they look great.
The first quarter of the Washington game looked equally as atrocious, you know? So it wasn't like it was isolated just the regular season.
Exactly. So I guess in that, now again, I'm saying that, not saying that that guarantees that everything's going to turn around. I just think that because the one thing I think we undersell to people that didn't play this game, it's really tough to communicate how important game planning and practice and fixing things and, you know, just not replicating the problems you had before. Sometimes if you just run different plays, work on different things, eliminate the things that you're not very good at, you look like an entirely different football team. And I felt like the Packers were kind of in that situation. I wrote on them just like you wrote on them last week and kept coming away from it thinking, wow, they just need to do this and they just need to do that. And if they don't do that, they'll be fine. And I think a lot of that played out. And I bring that up because I think the Patriots kind of sit in the same place. Quick game, as you mentioned with Aaron Rodgers, the Patriots, when they transition into that, they can't live in it. They can't do 60 pass attempts on the game and go wire to wire in quick game. But I do feel like it's a team that they mix and match that element. It saves them where the protection, you know, they've got an extremely young interior offensive line. They're starting two rookies and the center is a second year player and the tackles are all injured. So, if you're going to go quick, I think you can really save the day. So I don't know. I simply bring that point up because I think it's at least interesting to watch in sort of a Petri dish kind of situation and see how it all shakes out, because I don't think that definitively, because they haven't looked good in the last couple weeks, that I will be surprised one bit if they walk out there against Kansas City and put up 30 points.
And also, you can't discount the fact that they understand how to play in the playoffs. It's almost like their game elevates just because they understand their applications, they have experience. They know, like you just said, you can have a string of somewhat rough outings, but you get in the playoffs and you put it together, those string of rough outings all of a sudden become forgotten, swept under the carpet like they never happened, almost like the eraser board, just go up and erase it all. And so they understand that element, that aspect of it. Sometimes that brings when they get into the playoffs. And I thought that was Aaron, to be honest. When I spoke to him pregame, he was relaxed, he was pumped. He's excited, you know, and everybody talked to me about how their Thursday practice leading up to that game was like the best they'd seen all year, the media people that had seen the media portion of it. And then Aaron was, you know, loose and, you know, excited to be in that position. And so I do believe these guys, like you look at Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, they've made their name in the playoffs. They didn't make their name in the regular season. And because of such, they understand the upside so much that it's almost like their focus gets honed in more, enhances more as soon as they get in the playoffs, because they know it's the ultimate eraser, because that ultimately, and it's what they've experienced, is what defines them as their legacy and as players that we currently know them to be in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm excited to see how it plays out, because we've got a lot of the good ones still left in this tournament. Now, I spent all that time building them up. I let you build them up, and now I'm going to tear them down a little bit in that I actually think, not personally, but I actually think that we're in a unique situation here in this particular playoffs, in that I think the strength of the teams that are left are actually more defensive-minded. I actually think that the deciding factor here, whether it be Denver's defense or Carolina's defense, or quite frankly, the better of the two units in New England right now is the defense, not the offense. Kansas City is very much a defensively led team. Seattle, as we mentioned earlier, I think those are some of your best. Arizona. I think some of these teams that, in my view, have, and again, it's just guessing and prognosticating here a little bit, but the teams that I want to guess that I think will get through this thing, my feelings rest more with how I think they can defend in this environment. And maybe that's just because I'm a defensive guy and you're a defensive guy and all that kind of stuff. But I guess my hopes would rest with a team much more strongly when I feel like they can stop you. And the notion that they'll be able to score some points, we'll figure that out, because they'll play field position and the game sort of changes in the playoffs. So I think that's in part why I'm a little less apt to get behind, I don't know, like Pittsburgh. Like Pittsburgh's a team to me, I expect a quick exit. Maybe I'll be dead wrong on that and I'll acknowledge as much when it happens, but I think they're just too inconsistent defensively. It wasn't exposed much last week because they were facing a young quarterback. They're a team that to me could really, really struggle this weekend. Back to the Packers as well, as you mentioned, you know, I don't think that the Redskins did a lot of the things that could hurt them. They've been so banged up in their secondary this year, although some of those guys have sort of come back. But anyway, that's just sort of my little parting shot, I guess, of things to look for in the go-ahead weekend. I know we're in the fantasy football mode, and we're thinking about who's going to get touches and who's going to get this and yards and all those kinds of things and points. I really think that this is going to be a defensively led tournament. That's just maybe my bias out there front and center.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for the majority of teams that holds true. Because even like with a team like the Packers that have historically, and I bring them up because I just know them so well, their mindset, especially right. defensively, historically they've relied so heavily on their offense that just defensively you don't play with that same kind of edge because you realize and you've had experiences with it that, hey, you know, you give up a few points, you know your offense can make up for it. But then all of a sudden, now in a situation where you got to carry the load, the pressure really increases, right. the stress increases to the point where you're not used to it. But I would say the anomaly is Arizona because their offense, man, they are an offense that they put defenses in huge dilemmas. And David Johnson's been a right. big reason why they're running back. And it's because he brings that power element to keep defenses honest that really try to just overload against protecting themselves against any vertical threat from a really good wide receiving corps that has it all with Larry Fitzgerald and Floyd and Brown in terms of speed, length, size, and then savviness in terms of running routes. That's what you're going to get from that group. And so as a defense, you have to acknowledge that. But at the same time, David Johnson keeps you honest to where you just can't all of a sudden say, okay, we're going to tear them to run the ball on us. Well, if you do that, you're going to run the ball down your throat. And then on top of it, Carson Palmer, man, the thing that's been so impressive about his game this year, here he's had two ACLs, one that was a non-contact ACL last year where he just planted wrong. And having had two ACLs myself, I understand the last hurdle to get over generally is that confidence, the psychological hurdle. And to see Carson move so confidently, so smoothly in the pocket, I mean, he almost looks more athletic this year than maybe he has his whole career. I'm even going back to his days in college. But a lot of the times where they win in a passing game is because he's able to buy time in the pocket. And so I look at that Arizona Cardinal offense. They're the one team that if they get hot and they start rolling, they could win it with their offense. But everybody else, I have to agree that if their defense base, their defenses have to show up in order for them to have a chance. And yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers especially with Ben Roethlisberger, he said it's great today on NFL.com. I'm hour to hour, which pretty much says I am so excited. I can't even tell you how I'm going to feel tomorrow, except I'm probably going to be, he's not going to be able to throw the ball very consistently, and that obviously really hurts their chances of having any type of success at Denver. Although it's a possibility that they can go in there and shock everybody, but I highly doubt it.
Yeah. Well, ear mouse to any children that might be listening to this. No swearing here, but I tore an AC joint and played through it. I couldn't wipe my ass, and that was, so I say that in that I could get through practice. I had real trouble getting my arms up over wrapped. I had it padded. Mobility was really tough, but I could survive it. And again, granted, I'm not throwing a football clearly, but to
hopefully
his point,
you had
an hour
to the day there. Not hopefully
exactly,
you had access to it the day.
Oh, no, just a fire hose, you know, so it was great. No.
Dang it.
And a really, yes, and a really friendly pet. No, I'm joking. But the idea there was definitely, man, you can't staple a stack of papers. But when you get, you know, a little Toradol shot or you take a pill or something like that and you get out on the field and the adrenaline starts flowing and you get lubricated, you're able to make it through it. And I can't explain that, but provided I think my grade was actually a little higher than what I've heard his described as, I won't be surprised. You know, maybe he's not reaching back and flinging it 70 yards like he sometimes does, but if he can manage it, I won't be surprised if that's the case. And I'll close the show here with sort of one final thought. And you brought it up. You stole my closing thought. I think what you said was perfect. I actually had one team that I think, at least as we stand today, that is as good offensively and defensively, or as scary both sides of the ball. To me, that's still Arizona. Now, we've still got two more shows to finish out the year after this. We may be back here in Arizona's out of the tournament next week, and I got to completely start over. But at least where things stand today, I really like them for that reason, because I look at football tournaments basically as – insurance policies. Like, I want to know that, you know, we've got eight little soldiers here. Which of the one can screw up one part, which happens, and there are enough leftover parts that can still push them through to get, you know, to get to the other side. And Arizona just seems like a team that they've got enough offensive weapons, from John Brown to Michael Floyd to Larry, if you have to rely upon him, to put David Johnson. They've just got all these different options. Fells gets involved in the tight end position occasionally. Some of the other wide receivers, I mean, they're deep. And that's not even counting the fact that I think this is a team that could win a 14-13 playoff game if they had to, with just defense turning the ball over or some big punter kick return. So, and that's, you know, if I got to gamble a dollar, and right now, obviously, the returning Super Bowl champions would be in that conversation as well if I knew they were healthy. I just need to see one more performance out of them, because they've looked so different for the last month that it would just seem too homerish for me to presume them back into that championship state that we haven't seen them in for a while. So that's where I sit. I'm going to really look forward to checking out the games this week. I'm pumped up, fired, full day of games Saturday and Sunday. You doing any more Deportes this weekend, Brady?
Yeah, I'll be out in Carolina on Sunday covering the Seahawks-Panther game. So I'll be front and center to one of probably the more physical games, both mentally and physically, of the whole playoff divisional round here. So looking forward to seeing that.
That'd be cool. Can you put a little is it possible when you're doing sort of the Spanish translation, can you put a little twang on it? Can you put like a little Carolina, a little barbecue on the tail end of your Spanish? Does that work? Is there a way to manipulate the lyric?
Now, I could, but I don't know if anybody would understand me. You know, I already got the gringo accent mixed in there. You know, you have the Carolina slang, you're really going to be out there.
You're really going to be confusing people. We'll find a good barbecue spot there, mustard sauce, vinegar, all that. I went down there and worked a preseason game for the Patriots, Carolina preseason game, found a great barbecue spot. So I'm envious. I'll be up here in the cold at the Patriots Chiefs game and enjoying life. So have a great weekend, buddy. Thanks for doing the show. Awesome insight as always. Take care.
Take care, bud. Have a good one.
And that's all we've got for today's show. Thanks so much for listening to the Football by Football podcast. As always, the FBF podcast can be found for streaming or download on footballbyfootball.com or blogtalkradio.com. You can download the FBF podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the TuneIn Radio app. For daily insightful stuff from these guys and others, make sure to check out the footballbyfootball.com Facebook page and give us a follow if on Twitter at FBByFB. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Football by Football podcast. Football insight by football players.
Night, Lucky. Night, Dusty.
Good night, Ned.
Good night, Ned.
Good night, Ned.